You need to cut this right before he starts talking about gnomes. It was funny before that.
It reminds me of a John Mulaney joke, but I'll tell you guys after we're done.
I thought we were cutting all of
it. Yeah, we're cutting all of it.
No, leave in the squeakquel
stuff. No, I will.
Leave
I will.
The funny stuff that I said. Take the stuff
that
he said.
Sure, okay. Hi, and welcome back to our third episode of
TVM Talks TV, where we do a podcast from TVM and we talk about TV. I'm Ben Bowler.
I'm Lila Taylor. And today we have a guest with us who is an expert in all things television and film.
I would say that's fair.
I would say that's fair as well. Introduce yourself.
Hello.
What's your name?
I'm going to keep them in suspense for a second. I would not say that I'm an expert in TV. I don't watch very much TV, in fact. So it is with great pleasure that I come here to talk to you about the television program American Vandal. My name, by the way, is Jacob Klemmer. I'm a TVM guy.
Yeah, and our goal here today is Lila here has not seen the program American Vandal, so we are here to convince her to watch such a show. And we will say spoilers throughout the program, but that's okay.
Yeah, I don't have very high hopes that I will be convinced, but I'm
it's
open
good.
To
we're
it.
We're starting with low expectations. There's
You're
nowhere
welcome.
To go but up from here.
That's true.
Because she probably wasn't going to watch it before, so we can't make it worse.
And the fact that the show was canceled after two seasons is, like, really not helping your cause.
It's a good show.
I want to say something about that. So, first of all, the first way I'm going to convince you to watch this show is to say 45 minutes an episode, 8 episodes a season, 2 seasons. It's not a big time commitment.
This is true.
And it's, I would say, an extremely bingeable show. Like, the cliffhanger structure of every episode, like, it really demands binging. But it's not a super long binge, either.
Yeah, which I think gets us into the beginning of the podcast that we're getting into, which is what makes the show so great. And it's a very tense show, and, like, there's very... You would think if there's a show about, in the first season, a character drawing penises on cars...
They're dicks.
A spoof, dicks.
Yeah.
Dicks on cars.
We could say the word dick on this podcast, right?
We can,
okay.
Probably.
I'm just asking you.
We're going to have to bleep all out.
they'll just not know what they drew on cars. But anyway, for a show that's about that.
We'll keep one, and then like, people will know. Like a citation, it'll be like a bleep.
Are you
reference.
Suggesting a footnote?
Yes.
For...
Well, in the show, they are referred to as dicks on cars.
This is true. But anyway, you would think if it's making a murderer spoof about dicks on cars, you would be like, this isn't going to be very deep. But then it is. Like, the characters are great, and it's also hysterically funny, and it keeps you on edge about a totally fictitious mystery with relatively low stakes compared to Serial and Making a Murderer.
Well, the mystery is deeply interesting.
It really is. If you have not seen the show, yeah, clearly. The premise of the first season is that a student is accused of drawing dicks on 27 teachers' cars and then deletes the security footage. But then it turns out it's not him, as you find out, throughout the series. And then a really interesting part of it that I... And then in season two, they have a slightly different premise. But at the end of season one, you don't find out who really did it.
They play coy with the...
Yeah.
With the... They're trying to prove innocence and not prove guilt
yes.
in both of these seasons, which makes it, I would argue, a more interesting mystery because they're trying to, like, it's easier to prove innocence and it's, like, more fun, in a sense, to watch mm-hmm. them try to prove without a shadow of the doubt that the guy did not draw the dicks on the car.
Yes. And then they really leave you at the end kind of almost unsatisfied because you're like, well, who did draw the dicks on this car? Cars in this mysterious world, and then you never find out.
And you're unsatisfied on a deeper level in that first season because although the I forget his name,
which
the character played by YouTube star Jimmy Tatro, who is the prime suspect of the dicks on the cars.
Ah, yes.
Continue. I forget his name. I mean, he is exonerated, mm-hmm. but but the class structure that caused him, Dylan Maxwell, but the class system that caused Dylan Maxwell to be a suspect and led his life down that path remains, tragically.
Mm. Yes.
What's the class, like an economic class system? What are you referring to?
I am referring to, hey, no, yeah, I told you this is going to be a deep pod, but yeah, so it's a show about a very, very privileged high school and the way that they are very quick to point the finger at the one poor kid who goes there.
He also had a habit of drawing dicks on things. So he was the prime suspect for such a crime due to his previous record.
But I mean, his previous record also, and one of my favorite bits from the original season is that they compare the dicks on the cars to like the dicks on the, with the seriousness of like comparing signatures and fingerprints. But they're like, no, the ball hairs are clearly different on the the dicks on the car.
Let's just say I knew the bare minimum. So now.
Now you have some context.
Sure.
Have you seen Making a Murderer or any of the other true crime things that it's parodying?
I've listened to the podcast S-Town, which is similar to Serial, but like that's about it.
Okay. So yeah, Making a Murderer, it's very similar to. So I watched Making a Murderer and then American Vandal. And
nice.
Oh my God, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
This is incredible. And then I also didn't have very high expectations for their characters and stuff based on the ad. I was like, it's like a throwaway show, and then oh, I got very invested. It was great. And also, one small thing that they do that I think makes it much more realistic is they're a high school and they refer to every student by their first and last name, which
that's
is exactly how high school students talk.
That's a really good point.
Funny to me.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point. Like, that alone sells me on the show.
That characters have names.
Yeah. They know that they're referred to as with their full names.
And they spend a lot of time on social media.
Can I say something about the social media?
I think they get close. I don't think they quite nail how we use it, but I think they're within the realm of how it's used.
I want to say right now, throwing the gauntlet down 10 minutes into this pod, that, and this means a lot coming from me because, as you know, I defend a lot of films about the internet that really shouldn't need Unfriended Dark Web. But I would say that American Vandal seasons 1 and 2 equally are probably definitely the best piece of filmmaking about the internet that's ever been made, because
hot takes,
but it's a true take, and I'll tell you why. So the first season has this wonderful, wonderful set piece. I'm not sure which episode it's in because they all bleed together in my mind because I binge watched the show. But where they're trying to track the paint can that was used to vandalize the cars through this party, and they go through everybody's Snapchat story and they create a 3D model of the house and they render it visually with the Snapchat stories, and it's all this excellent cutting between different cell phone videos. And I think that moments like that realized the filmic potential of what camera phones and internet streaming have had on the visual language, more so than any other thing I can think of. There's a scene in the finale of that first season where one character and another character are having a very heartfelt conversation, which is captured only in audio on a Zoom that's left on a table and then glimpsed visually from the corner of someone else's Snapchat story. It's great stuff.
So they delve a lot. The second season focuses a lot more on internet culture, and there's one an important piece of evidence is the iPhone glitch from 2016 where your eyes turned into A and then a question mark.
Yes.
So seen by a film including this iPhone glitch as a plot detail.
It was an episode. A significant portion of an episode was dedicated to the piece of evidence based on the iPhone glitch. And I was
that's really smart.
The person writing us kind of gets it, a little bit.
But I feel like
a lot of people also, thank you, a lot of people have friends that they are only in contact with on the internet. I know that I do. Like people who went to my high school with me and then moved away.
Yes, that's the same.
You can connect.
And
people.
It's great that that it exists this way. So on one hand, it does it saps you of a little bit of your presence in life. But on the other hand, I wouldn't have a lot of friendships that I do have right now.
Right. So delving more into American Vandal. There are some distinct differences between season one and season two. So I was wondering which season you prefer, or what do you think about the differences between the two seasons?
On one hand, I find the first season has a much less complex and conspiratorial mystery. And it is also very explicit about the person that did it. So on one hand, I like the way that that pays off, but I think it makes a lot of the episodes in the middle kind of lose a little bit of, like, a little bit of... We're almost, like, having less of an investigation because we're building to such a big reveal. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the episodes in the middle of season two are...
Season two?
Yeah, season two. A lot of the episodes in the middle are, like, not as satisfying as, like, the middle episodes of season one. But I think the finale of season two is one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen. So, like, I would say it's... Well, I mean, you'd be very confused.
Yes. You'd be like, the turd burglar? What is going on here? But, yeah, I tend to agree. I think season two... I think the first half of season two was weaker than all of season one. I think the second half of season two was just as good as season one. So I think it kind of picked up, but it is more conspiratorial. And it does drag a little bit. But also the ending... It did a mystery well, where it's a surprise, but it also all makes sense. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, I didn't expect that, but you don't feel like you were cheated, and you don't feel like you didn't have the opportunity to figure out. You don't feel like, oh, that's just like out of nowhere.
So and I feel like there's like four or five different things that are revealed in that last episode. So even if you'd predicted one of them, you almost certainly would not have been able to predict the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think sometimes what I run into a little bit with a problem with this show is that they'll, like, be making a case for someone, and I just won't believe it. So, like, they'll be like, I think this person did it for these reasons, and I'm watching, I'm like, no. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, they'll say a motive, and I'll be like, it's a very weak one. Like, that doesn't...
One of the things it does really well, better than many genuine documentaries, is acknowledge the bias of the filmmakers. And much drama is made out of the fact that these two guys cannot fully separate themselves from the case because of their, like, you know, their friendships and their crushes and everything.
More in general, like, there are ethical questions to what they're to the things they're exposing in people's lives.
Right.
Which they do mention towards the end of the first season, is they're like, well, we ruined some lives along the way, and that wasn't exactly what we set out to do. So
that is taken seriously by the show.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's
I need both microphones for this. Like, the seriousness of, like, the things that happen later on in the first season is genuinely shocking.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, like, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but it's, like, not funny. And it's, like, a real dramatic thing that happens at the end of that first season. And things, and it's particularly good at getting things that you laughed at previously, as with the handjob story, to be, like, you consider what you were laughing at, and you consider your own bias as a viewer, that you were being treated to laugh at this girl being humiliated on camera for, like, the whole world to see. Of course, it's all fictional, but still.
It makes you feel things. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the goal here?
It implicates you as a viewer, and that's really what cinema's all about.
What would you say the affect is that you...
Are you guys in a film class or something?
Maybe.
I'm not
definitely
sure.
Interest, excitement, perhaps a bit of disgust. Can I say something about the crudeness of the show?
Sure.
Well, I feel like when I describe this show to people and try to convince them to watch it, they're always like, oh, so this is just a gross out comedy about dicks and poop and everything.
That's what I'm gathering, to be honest.
And the reason that it's funny is not just because there's, like, you know, jokes about poop, but because
it's nice to have those.
But because the thing that's funny is that the crude humor is delivered with the seriousness, despite how ridiculous it is.
And the people they're exonerating also are not great people. Like they're okay, maybe.
Well, Dylan Maxwell did nothing wrong.
Yes, but, like, he's not the most likable guy.
I think he's likable.
Really?
I was on his side the whole time.
Well, I wanted him to be exonerated for something he didn't do, but I wouldn't want to be his best friend. Like, he wasn't, like, somebody I, like, really connected with or really felt was, like, a likable person, but they want to exonerate him anyway.
It's because you don't know how to party. But the
you got me.
I have a much more complex relationship with the guy they're trying to exonerate in season two, because he's not immediately like a fun guy that you like spending time with.
Or a nice.
You do come to like him after a while, and then you realize like the layers to what's going on with him as a guy.
Yeah, where he explains how he felt alienated, so he's like, screw it, I'm going to alienate myself as much as possible because I don't need other people, which is an instinct I think people have sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what, I don't need anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you realize, yes, I do.
Should we take a quick break?
Yeah, we could take a quick break here. And then we will be back with more TVM Talks TV.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. And we're back.
Welcome back to TVM Talks TV, episode 3.
So
American Vandal.
Yeah, so the whole part of what makes, from what I've gathered, I have not seen American Vandal. For those of you just tuning in.
Is it live?
Yes. For those of you who are deciding to watch just the second half of the podcast, which I understand.
I would totally see why someone would do that. I always say second half's better than the I just don't know.
Yeah, so
proceed.
What part of what makes American Vandal so unique and smart, I guess, is how it effectively uses the parody format and does a parody of...
I liked your hesitation before you said the word smart.
Thank you. and how it parodies Making a Murderer, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So
why is it effective?
It's partially what we were saying earlier with the seriousness that they take the whole thing. And also they have like 3D recreations of what's happening, and then they have a corkboard with pins and string.
One detail I appreciate is that in every one of these mockumentaries and real documentaries, there's the canny, like, we weren't able to get footage of this event, but we left our microphones on. And it's done very well in the first in the first season of American Vandal, where they're just like, so, what do you know about the cars? She's like, turn the cameras off. And then it's like whispered tones, like, we need you to stop this investigation.
And then a lot of times they film things like around a corner or something.
So, favorite characters? No segue.
Excellent segue. 10 out of 10. Segues are hard.
So, John Waters is one of my favorite characters in Alvin and the Chipmunks 3. Chipwrecked?
You can only refer to it as Chipwrecked.
It's the third.
Is that actually what it's called?
Do you think?
Yeah, the Squeakquel Chipwrecked Road Chip.
Wait, my question is, do you think they came up with the title first and then wrote the movie 100. Around road trip?
Not the squirrel,
or do you think they wrote the movie the and just and coincidentally made it about a road trip and they're like, oh, look at this, it's a pun.
My favorite movie that they... No, but like the movie that is most clearly an example of that, in my opinion, is The Santa Claus. Where some guy comes into an office and he's like, what if we made a movie called The Santa Claus, but Claus was spelled with an E on the end? And they're like, we'll give you $30 million for the title The Santa Claus.
Okay. Back to favorite characters, please. Can we talk about favorite characters? Because right now I'm not watching this show. So.
So there's an interesting dynamic between the two main guys who fight as much as best friends fight, I would say.
Cute.
It's kind of adorable. The way they film it and stuff. And they're not perfect, which is true for any TV show. Like, there are a few TV shows where, like, maybe West Wing with the president, but, like, where the main character, where, like, one of the characters is like, we're gonna duck.
You can have me on and I'll be your hater.
Okay, cool. Hater of the whole show, or, like, Rob?
Just what the show stands for.
Okay.
So they have an interesting dynamic, and they're not necessarily likable. They're like pretty likable. The guys they're trying to exonerate, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think they're terribly likable.
Well, I'm gonna fight you on this.
Yes.
So
that's for the next.
That's your class privilege talking. The first guy, Dylan Maxwell, just a wonderful, funny dude that everyone loves. And the show begins with a bunch of people just talking shit about him. Like, Dylan Maxwell, that guy sucks. Like, he's super annoying. He does all these weird pranks. The pranks he does are really funny. And then the show does one of my favorite things where in the final episode of season one, characters gather to watch the first episode of season one, because the show is like in within the show they're like publishing episodes of American Vandal. Like
in one of the later seasons of The Office, where they all gather to watch the like PBS series that they created. Sure.
Right. Except this is with a purpose and also good.
That episode's good.
Yeah. But then like he shows up and like sees all the people that are like, oh yeah, Dylan Maxwell, I knew he did it. I knew he was the guy that drew the dicks on the cars. What a doofus. He'll never amount to anything. And he's like bummed out by though he was exonerated, it's like a hollow victory. And the hollowness of the Dylan Maxwell subplot, I really enjoy. DeMarcus Tillman is probably one of my favorite characters in the show. I know I said earlier that Kevin was the most interesting character, but DeMarcus is equally interesting now that I'm thinking about
it. DeMarcus is. So there's a star basketball player at the Catholic high school they're investigating. I also really like DeMarcus. I think he's a great character. I think he's super likable. But DeMarcus, he's a star basketball player, and then he gets caught up in their investigation of who pulled multiple
he's one of the prime
pranks.
Suspects for a while.
Yes, who pulled these poop-based pranks at the school. He becomes a prime suspect, and then they start delving into how he feels about it. Mm-hmm. And they talk about code switching for a little bit.
Yes. This is one of the best parts of the show, is that discussion about code switching, which is really funny, but also, like, really true.
Important. And how he comes from, like, he travels from, like, a long distance to go to that school to play basketball, and he comes from, like, a different class as them, and he talks differently than all the privileged kids who go there. And how he's, like, the most popular kid in school, and he doesn't know if any of his
and
wheel.
He's got this whole entourage of people who are like who like say that everything he does is super cool, and his reactions to that are constantly interesting, because you can sometimes see him wanting more, but sometimes see him like using it to his advantage, especially when the investigation starts like turning against him.
And he clearly is like empathetic. I don't know if Dylan Maxwell is in the first season.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I don't know what you're...
Because, for example, the first example I think of is when he would pull a prank where he'd fart on babies. That's
so hilarious.
That's a little rude. You can see how that's not super empathetic.
I didn't realize you were a cop.
agree to disagree about the likability of Dylan Maxwell in the first season. Much more complex characters than you would expect from a show. I believe I watched it in 2 days, the whole series, which I don't do that much. So I remember that. I'm trying to think. And they're both kind of anti-administration stuff, which is like, makes sense.
That's always funny.
Yeah.
Stick it to the man, you know.
And how teachers are like...
Have you guys seen School of Rock? Like, same exact thing.
And teachers lie and mislead.
False
accusations and judge.
Don't have the names that they say they do, such as in School of Rock. Anyway.
Here's my thing. The character of Dylan Maxwell will grow up to be Dewey from School of Rock. Which means that he's a likable character. No, just in terms of, like, what kind of type he is. Like, he goofs around, has, like, a lot of, like, fun with his friends. We don't know if he has musical talent.
They never said he didn't.
You know who does have musical talent? Kevin from season 2. He's an intelligent dance music producer. Which is a real genre.
A shtick that it's, like... I don't know enough about the type of music to say whether it's good or not.
It's bad.
Yeah, okay. I thought that's the whole shtick, is it's terrible.
Dance music.
That's a real genre, but he's a snob about it, and his snobbishness is one of the more realistic aspects about him.
Yeah. So so they kind of do opposite characters who are but they're both like outcasts of society.
Yeah, but
people had preconceived notions about them that further their...
But neither of them are particularly upset about their outcast status until they get accused of the crimes, which I think is really interesting, where Kevin plays into his outcast status a lot, and we find out that a lot of the things that we had assumed were, like, him being bullied, especially the Fruit Ninja thing. The Fruit Ninja thing is really funny, where people...
Funny. I don't even know it.
Can I describe the bit to you? So people throw fruit at him and he does the Fruit Ninja thing.
I've seen that somewhere, but continue.
And they're like, oh,
with
how America, cruel. Everyone's
seen the show and you've been lying to us this whole time.
No. Why would I waste my time putting up this facade?
No, but like they perceive that fruit ninja thing as like, oh, everyone's throwing fruit at him. What a poor guy. And then they ask him about it. And he's like, oh, yeah, the fruit ninja thing. Everyone loves it. Isn't it hilarious? It's great. It's wonderful. Yeah. We forgot to mention the greatest character in television history, who is Ming Zhang from season one of American Vandal.
Wow. Who is hot takes?
Who is the exchange student who is their suspect for like a couple seconds until they realize that Ming Zhang is the greatest person who ever lived and he could never be like, he's like incredibly small but able to like, we see him doing a keg stand at one of the parties later on and he like handles it really well. And like, he's the guy that just everyone in the school absolutely loves no matter who they are and who you as a viewer absolutely love. And there's always the one guy who everyone loves.
Anyway, all right. Well, thank you, Jacob, for being a guest.
Thank you, Jacob.
Do you have any final thoughts?
You are welcome.
Okay, cool.
Great. How gracious.
And with that, this has been TVM Talks TV.
Thanks.
I'm Lila.
I'm Ben. And
that's it. And watch Alvin and the Chipmunks. It's better than
all four of them.
Is it better than the first? Can I?
How would you rank the Alvin and the Chipmunks films that you've seen?
Oh, I'm gonna be honest, I've only seen the first two. But I would go 2-1.
Is the Squeakquel better than
the first? Yes. I think so. It's more interesting.
It's more interesting.
Because you get the Chipettes. The female counterparts of the Chipmunks.
How did they not have that in the first?
Because you're just introducing the Chipmunks. The Chipettes are really fun, and like they act as a foil for the Chipmunks.
Studio album of Chipmunk songs.
Can I ask you a couple questions about the Squeakquel? So the David Cross character, does he show up in both films?
Yes.
Okay.
He plays more of a role in the first one as the like toxic manager of the Chipmunks.
Who's the main antagonist of the second film?
I think it is also David Cross. He's trying to steal the Chipettes and like claim them as, because he can't have the Chipmunks. Because he has the Chipmunks as a client, because he cannot have the Chipmunks as a client, he tries to get the Chipettes as a client.
Okay.
Can I ask another question?
I have a question. Two things. First of all, this is more of a comment than a question.
No. Then you're not allowed to say it. So,
this is my time.
What role does the Jason Lee character play in the second film? What does he do?
So he's really not. He's still like the father figure to the Chipmunks, but he goes on like a business trip or something. I don't remember quite why. He's
a structuring absence, like the character of Rebecca in Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca.
I guess you could say so. Yes.
Are you guys in a film class?
Stop. but. Yeah, exactly. He's a structured absence. He also, let's see, I need to rewatch it, but they have a talent show in the second one. They sing the Chipettes sing Beyonce, which is really fun.
Who are the actors that play the Chipettes?
I can't remember, but they're like big names.
Big names?
Yeah.
Because I can't remember anyone who plays the Chipmunks.
Jesse McCartney plays the chubby one,
I'm
Theodore.
I'm really happy to hear that.
Okay, let me look up. I'm sorry, I need to look this up. So the voices of the Chipettes are Justin Long plays Alvin.
Justin Long plays Alvin.
Matthew Gray Goobler plays Simon. I don't know who that is. Jesse McCartney plays Theodore. Christina Applegate plays Brittany the Chipette. Anna Faris plays Jeanette the Chipette. And Amy Poehler plays Eleanor the Chipette.
This is the Anna Faris Amy Poehler collaboration that I've been waiting for.
And Christina Applegate, don't forget her.
Amazing casting agents they must have had to get.
Oh, Dave's. Jason Lee is injured. That's the problem. So for some reason, like, he can't. Can't be with them. Ian Hawke is broke and destitute. Sad. Yeah, I could read the Wikipedia entry. I'm not going to.
Have this mic for
could that
a second.
Be a new podcast? We just read the Wikipedia entries
of Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yes.
Cool. So how does he
soon
get
the Chipettes are hired to open for the Britney's. He like falls
to
off a Britney Spears. He falls off a stage or something. I don't remember. Oh, and then, David, I want to say David Cross tries to lock up the Chipmunks. Okay, we need to end this.
that has been
for TVM Talks TV, we talked about American Vandal and all four Alvin and the Chipmunks movies, which are called, Lila, can you please re-inform us?
Very much.
What are the names of the four movies again?
Alvin and the Chipmunks, Alvin and the Chipmunks 2, The Squeakquel, Alvin and the Chipmunks 3, Chipwrecked, and Alvin and the Chipmunks 4, Road Chip. We only really talked about the first two, just a warning.
Okay, maybe we talked about John Waters' disappearance in the third one.
That's true.
The fourth one is the one we haven't talked about.
That's okay, though.
For TVM Talk TV, I am Ben Buller.
I am Lila.
This has been Talking Chipmunks with Jim Schummer.
And we're out.